Welcome to The Edge, the podcast that looks at what's happening next in Canadian innovation. I'm your host, Kate Kenyon. Here at Mitax, we're at the crossroads of innovation in Canada. Every year, hundreds of companies and thousands of researchers come to us looking to combine their ideas to make innovation happen. This gives us quite a view. We get to see what the brightest minds are coming up with all over the country. We've got stories to tell, and we want you to hear them. Robotics, artificial intelligence, fashion, athletics, conservationism, whatever it is that makes you geek out, Mitax is on the cutting edge. This is a podcast about what's next, about what emerging Canadian innovators are doing to improve our world. This is The Edge. Episode 2, Leading Women. Women in Canada are still underrepresented when it comes to innovation. In an economy dominated by small to medium-sized enterprises, women own only 16% of them, and Canadian female-led startups receive just 2% of available venture funding. Despite outnumbering men in postgraduate education, women remain less likely to become decision makers, senior managers, or business owners, and they have spent the last decade occupying less than 30% of the tech industry. Inclusive innovation has never been more needed, but it's also never been more exciting. Since 2019, the number of Canadian women-founded unicorns, a term for new startups with a value of more than $1 billion, has almost doubled. Femtech, innovation led by the needs of the female consumer, is also on the rise, promising to flip the script not only on who gets to innovate, but on who gets to benefit from innovation. And in a changing business landscape in which profit is no longer necessarily seen as the only measure of success, women entrepreneurs' documented propensity for social innovation is emerging as a major asset, with their efforts making a significant contribution to UN sustainability goals. But what's it like on the ground? What's it really like being a woman innovator in Canada in 2023? What barriers are female entrepreneurs coming up against, and what do they need? Why is it still so important to encourage women to take their place as leaders and innovators? And why should we be excited about what the future holds? The time is ripe for a discussion of female leadership and innovation. And here at The Edge, we are delighted to bring together a panel of leading women from across the Canadian innovation spectrum to discuss their experiences and shine a light on the work and contributions of female innovators in our country. I couldn't be in better company to explore these questions and many more today. Kayla Isabel is Chief Executive Officer at Startup Canada, awarded a 2022 Top 40 Under 40 recognition by the Ottawa Business Journal. Kayla is the founding executive director of the Innovators and Entrepreneurs Foundation, board member at the Ottawa Board of Trade, and she serves as a mentor for various organizations, including the Founder Institute. Kayla is passionate about leveraging the power of storytelling in the business community, particularly for women entrepreneurs, as the host of the Startup Women podcast. Sunshine Kwem Tanasco is a First Nations mother of four children from Kitigan Zibi Anishinaabeg. She is a social entrepreneur and author who, in 2015, launched Her Braids, a business aiming to create awareness about the issue of clean drinking water in First Nations communities. She's also the founder and chair of Powwow Pitch and founder and host of the Powwow Pitch podcast. Powwow Pitch gives Indigenous entrepreneurs a platform to showcase their entrepreneurial endeavors and a chance to win startup cash and mentorship. Juliette Champey is a scientist who is finishing her PhD in chemical engineering at Laval University. Originally from France, she arrived in Canada in 2014. Since then, she has combined her passion for science and entrepreneurship by founding Ivano Bioscience, of which she is CEO. Ivano Bioscience aims to develop laboratory test kits that speed up the process for developing and testing new vaccines, helping them get to market faster. Juliette is also the recipient of a Mitax Entrepreneur Award for Global Impact. Welcome, all three of you, to this episode of The Edge. I'm delighted you could join us for this discussion. I'll start with an opening question for all of you. Each of you are leaders, business leaders, organization leaders, people leaders.
What is the number one piece of leadership advice that you have come across? Kayla, shall we start with you?
Thanks so much for having us, Kate. That's a great question to kick off today's conversation. I think the best leadership piece of advice that's come across my desk, I think in the last year in particular, is your energy introduces you before you do. There's been such a shift in going to more in-person events and being in different types of spaces, and also holding space for what has happened in the last couple of years. And coming in with positivity, with enthusiasm, and with energy has been really important for me to kind of juice myself back up after such a depleting last couple of years.
Lovely. Next up, Juliette, would you like to step in?
Yeah, I think one advice would be to just go and ask around to potential clients if your ideas would answer to one of their needs. Mm-hmm. Because usually we have an idea and we think maybe, oh, I'm going to try to develop a prototype and put it on the market and see if it's working. I think maybe a smarter way would be to ask if the idea would be potentially answering one of their needs and then develop the prototype just to make sure that there is a good traction on what you want to develop.
Sunshine.
Hi, thank you for having me today, Kate. I think it's just to stay curious. I think that kind of keeps you open-minded and flexible and willing to learn. So I think that's a good piece of advice.
Lovely. Great start. I'd like to hear about our two entrepreneurs' first experiences or early experiences of pitching to investors. What was that like? And what do you do differently now? Sunshine, can you kick us off?
Yeah, I still don't know, to be honest. I didn't even know what a pitch was when I went on Dragon's Den. Like, actually, I went to the audition and there was like so many wild, amazing products. And I showed up with baby moccasins and a Ziploc bag from the dollar store and a little sticker. And I walked in and I was like, oh my God, look at these like actual real deal products. Anyways, long story short, I was very pregnant. So they ended up telling me on the spot. I didn't know then, but they sent me a guide and Google was my best friend. And I learned about the valuation of my business, but also learned behind the scenes that I didn't value my first business properly, and was told that by one of the dragons that obviously that part wasn't aired, but like there were so many mistakes that I made and I don't regret any minute of it.
That's fantastic and very reassuring, I think, to hear that somebody was able to go in and have the boldness to just give it a try. And you succeeded. I mean, you succeeded on Dragon's Den, am I right?
Yeah. So Brett and Arlene invested. And I think that, like, yes, obviously the money was helpful, but it was also about the sort of mentorship that I got as well. With Brett, that is still invaluable and something near and dear to my heart, but also, the platform, the minute that it was aired, I had made, like I had stock that took me like 4 months of day to day with a nice team. And it was all sold out by midnight the same day that it was aired, and it aired, I don't know, at 8 or 9 or something at night. So, that's a learning.
What do you think made you successful? Looking back now, you know, you didn't have all your ducks in order. They told you. Why were you successful nonetheless in your Dragon's Den pitch?
I think there was a lot of reasons, but something that Arlene, so they actually came to my reserve about a couple of years after this crew. And then we were on the, like, what are they up to now episode. And what was said to me, which I didn't realize, I guess, at the time, was that they invest in the person, the honesty. And I had said stuff that I wasn't supposed to say on camera, but it worked out in my favor because I was being just straightforward, I guess. And they just wanted to help me. And that's what happens. And like, you know, and even with powwow pitches, yes, we want to invest in your business, but we're investing in you. You're going to do it whether we join the party, your party or not. So we just want to be a part of that to help, you know, maybe take you to the next level. And so that's sort of always on my mind now. What I'm realizing that is that it really is about relationships. I'm investing in you and your vision and to see if our values are aligned and all that good stuff, you know?
Yeah, for sure. P, people over those details. Juliet, your experience of pitching, you're still fairly early on, I know, but you've done a few pitches, I think. What has your experience of pitching been like, and what advice would you give to other people who might be trying it for the first time?
The first pitches we did, we were like being very enthusiastic scientists. So we liked to speak about science, the science behind the product, and being very specific and using words that other people wouldn't really understand. So one of the thing we had to work on was to facilitate the language, like to simplify the language. So not using scientific terms, going down to earth and making it accessible to everyone, that's something we had to learn. And I think the training programs we took in those incubators really helped us, because we were able to practice in front of people that are not in our field, and so we're able to see when they wouldn't understand and what help us maybe find the right words to express what we were doing, and also more trying to talk about the benefit of the product and not really the science behind it, because that's the scientific part where we are very excited and look at how it is so cool because we made this and that, but that's more about the benefit that we can bring to the clients. Yeah. So we had to learn that, refraining the scientist and more speaking in business term.
Yeah, absolutely. Knowing how to speak to them in a language they understand. While we've got you, Kayla, is the situation changing for VCs, venture capitalists who are women in Canada? Is that number increasing? Are we seeing a change? Because at the moment, I think something like 80% of investors are male. Is that changing in Canada?
It is not fast enough. We're definitely seeing more women enter into the investment community, because that's so important to have women investors investing into women entrepreneurs. But we need to see men investing in women, right? We're not going to be able to solve this challenge of lack of capital to women-led founders with just having more women investors. We need that whole space to be more equitable and potentially put some mandates around it. With the increase in women investors, I believe we've gone up to 25% or 30%. That number has increased in the last year, but still, even the pool of funding that's gone to startups has increased, the percentage that has still been allocated to women entrepreneurs, even with more investors, still remains incredibly low, around that 2%. So we haven't actually seen that pie extend out to women founders, even with more women at the other side of the table. So we still have a long way to go.
A more personal question to each of you, our guests. We talk about imposter syndrome. Is this something that you have felt as individuals and leaders? Juliet?
I think at some point we all have that imposter syndrome, but I think we also try to do the best we can and try also to surround ourselves with people that can help us with the lack of knowledge we can have on some part of the development of a company. So yes, I think we all have it, but we are just all trying to cope with that and try to find solutions to move forward, actually.
Mm-hmm. Sunshine, have you ever felt imposter syndrome?
I think with my first business, because it was the first time someone had called me that, and I sort of felt like I had to be this, I don't even know what, this role. And so when that failed, that was a huge blessing for me to know, like, okay, so I'm not a leader, so I'm not a business person, so I'm not all these things. And it just wiped the slate clean, which I really appreciate now. I think that even just you calling us leader, I don't know, you can call me that, and that's cool. And whatever, however you perceive me, is not really my business. I just know that I do my work, and I, you know, the work that we tried to do at Powwow Pitch is more circular. And so it's not a hierarchy where there's, you know, whatever leader, CEO, like, you know, I've had conversations with people, like, I don't really care what you call me, but, you know, this is the vision. And if you want to jump on board, let's hopefully, you know, these are the principles that we go by. And so I don't know. Now I think that sort of like that fall from grace from the powwow, from a Dragon's Den business was, helped me sort of erase all that.
Kayla?
I've heard the term, you know, so many women brush their teeth every morning with imposter syndrome. Like that it's just such a like tense part of this, which I refuse to accept because, you know, if we are telling ourselves that we are not worthy of what is being presented to us or, you know, what is manifesting out of our hard work, we're doing ourselves such a disservice. It's such wasted energy, right? I think where I struggled with this the most was when I took over Startup Canada, which was March 1st, 2020, days before the pandemic. And my entering into the world of being a CEO and the world falling apart are so interconnected that it was so much uncertainty. I had no idea what to do. We had, you know, huge in-person events all across Canada and all these different partners and stakeholders and the community that we serve, entrepreneurs, were in this, you know, catastrophic moment. So many founders, you know, were shutting their doors and struggling with their mental health and all of the complications of those conversations. And so I was both processing what it meant to lead an organization that was changing rapidly. I was understanding an entrepreneurship community that I had never worked before, but in this specific context, and having to save face to try to keep the organization afloat, right? We have sponsors, we have partners, we have all of these various groups that fund our organization. So trying to also say, you know, everything is fine. We're going to be okay. We're going to navigate through this. I have no idea what we're going to do. But that was exhausting. And it took such a heavy mental toll on me, especially in the first couple of years. And what I wish I would have done is just talked to some other CEOs and said, do you know what's going on? Do you have any idea how you're going to, you know, pivot your entire organization? Everybody was talking about it. And I was seeing all these messages and I had access to so many entrepreneurs and people leading organizations. And I never thought, can I actually hold space for my question through this? And so I have learned so much from that. To Sunshine's point, like all of these experiences, like they make you so much stronger. They give you such a different perspective on things moving forward, what's actually important. And ultimately, I think I learned so much in that short period of time because I wasn't feeling confident about what the next step was, but I wasn't going to fail. Like it was just this iterative, we're going to figure something out. And that's what entrepreneurship is, right? Ultimately, the first path that you take probably won't be the path that actually brings you to whatever success looks like for you. And being comfortable with that iteration and flexibility is really important in entrepreneurship. So I just like to position it as a masterclass in entrepreneurship in that first little while. But it's exhausting. It's really exhausting spending all that energy challenging yourself and putting yourself in uncomfortable situations or rooms where people don't look like you or have the same perspective as you. But it pays off when you finally get to bring all of that experience under kind of the umbrella of your life, right? It makes you such a more textured and colorful person once you have that variety of experiences.
Yeah, I can really hear this sort of, what I'm hearing is resilience is really required to get through these difficult periods. You talk about being, you know, perhaps the only person in the room who looks the way you do. I think that's probably something that Juliet can also relate to working in a science field. Juliet, I know you have an opinion on this where it's you've noticed it less working in the science, the STEM field. Do you often find that you are in male-dominated spaces? And is this something that you notice?
Well, I don't really look at the gender. Usually when I'm in the room, I more focus on the energy and how people are being with each other. So yeah, for me, it's not really important of that aspect. I'm more, how can we benefit from each other? How can we help each other? I think it's more important than, are you male or female? I think also, especially in science, what I've seen is more and more women deciding to enter in a scientific studies, like undergrad or grad. I see more women entering in that kind of profile. And I think I also see more women CEOs or women trying to start a business. And I think it's very inspiring.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's very good to hear on both counts.
Yeah, we'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
That's great.
You brought up the pandemic there, Kayla. I'll go around to our other guests after. But firstly, you have to be an entirely remote leader. Is that right? All of the Startup Canada staff are remote. What's that been like?
It has been extremely challenging. I think it has been the right thing. As a national organization, we support entrepreneurs across the entire country. And I think it's important for us to have a local perspective on that, that if our entire team is based out of Ottawa or Toronto, that silos your perspective, right? You're only thinking about one particular experience. So we get to pull from, you know, great businesses that we meet regularly in Vancouver and Calgary and Halifax, and that creates a richer organization. Organizationally, I think at first it was challenging in not being able to rely on a lot of institutional knowledge. We had a lot of turnover before the pandemic as well. So the team was getting to know each other remotely while also trying to pivot every single thing that we do and rebuild the organization almost brick by brick. So we weren't really focusing on culture independently. It was sort of built over time through what remote afforded us. So being able to be truly flexible and letting our team live their lives, be entrepreneurs themselves. Half of our team have their own ventures on the side. And inherently in that, we give them that opportunity to go to pitch competitions in the middle of the day in a different time zone. Or, you know, one of our staff is in Saudi Arabia right now pitching for the World Entrepreneurship Cup. And that's unbelievable. We're cheering her on, you know, from Canada. So I think building a very clear remote structure is important for culture. It's challenging to get everyone on the same page. And I miss the in-person. I miss having, you know, all of this face-to-face. And so we're still trying to prioritize that and bringing the team together a few times a year. But no system is perfect. I think everyone right now is trying to figure out, is it, you know, 3 days in the office, remote, da-da-da. Every organization is going to need something different. Nobody's going to be perfect for everyone. And I'm very curious to see where things evolve in the next year as well, because I think a lot of commitments some organizations have made, they might go back on it once they see what that does to the connection of your staff and the community that needs a little bit of in-person.
Oh, yeah, I've certainly felt that myself for sure. In-person is precious. Sunshine, how has the pandemic affected your work? Were there challenges? Were there rewards? How did it impact you?
Yeah, so I've been working remotely and at home for the past 8 years.
Oh, you were doing it before it was cool.
Yeah, well, it just, you know, it is what it is. What happened was I decided, like, not long before the pandemic to grow. And I had been pumping the brakes for a long time because my first business failed and it grew too fast and all that stuff. And so I was very hesitant. And then not long before the pandemic, I made that, you know, that I was like, okay, internally, I'm like, ready. I'm ready now. Let's take the next step. And what ended up happening was the pandemic was so good for Powwow Pitch by accident, because I don't know if I ever would have made the pitch competition online, but that opened up so many doors nationally. And now, a couple of years later, internationally as well, where we're getting pitches from people who never would have been able to afford to come and pitch in person or to come from communities up north. So, like, it really opened our eyes. And now that will be part of how we deliver what we do from now on. So, yes, we're also going back now again. We started last year going back to in-person pitches. So it's both. I love it.
That's fantastic. It's interesting to hear that, you know, so innovation and entrepreneurship seems to cluster around urban centers, right? And there is the issue of untapped potential in rural areas in Canada. And I guess the pandemic, by putting things more online, has served to reach out to some of these untapped communities. And Sunshine, you're giving us evidence. Have you seen that on the ground? Have you seen people who are sharing their ideas and fulfilling their potential who might not otherwise without the pandemic?
Absolutely. That's so many of the entrepreneurs who come and pitch are all, you know, northern communities where it costs a lot of money to travel. It's not like, you know, travel here where you go out of Ottawa and it's, you know, like $500. There's thousands and thousands just to travel. So that's just doable to participate in activities in other places where it's held live, you know. And how are you going to take that chance when you're trying to start a business? And now, thank goodness for satellite internet and Wi-Fi, now that's becoming more easily available. And so they can pitch and do their things online. So we're taking baby steps, but they're baby steps forward. So that's good.
Juliet, I know that, you know, Ivano Bioscience is in the vaccine space. So I'm sure the pandemic has had an impact, good and or bad, on Ivano. Can you talk us through what the pandemic was like for Ivano Bioscience?
the pandemic highlighted several bottlenecks that the bioindustry was having while developing vaccine and drugs. For us, it was an opportunity to just take a step back, think about what we are able to do thanks to our PhD background, and see if we were able to bring solution to some of those bottlenecks that the bioindustry was having. And that's how we were able to create the solution that we are actually currently finishing the development. That was a highlight. It also facilitate, I think, collaboration, because everybody in the bioindustry was focusing together on bringing vaccine and antiviral drugs. That was also an opportunity for us. But we also had some challenges, like supply challenges, because in the bioindustry, we are using laboratory-grade plastics that we don't have the choice but to use. So everybody was buying it. So at some point, there were supply challenges. So we had to find solution to rationally use those plastics. I think that was a challenge, but it turned out also to be kind of an opportunity to have a better way to use those kind of consumables and save cost and also have a better footprint. So yeah, there were challenges, there were opportunities, but everybody now is happy to be able to just get back together and share.
Okay, I guess I want to dive a little bit into the place of women in the leadership and innovation landscape as you see it from your various perspectives. Studies have shown that it is beneficial to organizations to have more women in leadership positions. It increases your agility and productivity. From your experience, what are the benefits you see to having women in leadership positions? Those could be, you know, economic, or they could be very personal and down on the human level. What have your observations been from your various perspectives about the benefits women bring to leadership positions? Sunshine, should we start with you?
Oh my God, that's such a huge question.
I know.
Personally, I think it's because we're more flexible because we have to be more flexible within our homes. I think it's especially true if you have children. And really, I think moms are the best entrepreneurs because this is what moms do all the time. Okay, this is happening, you know, sort of like an octopus as well. And that's my take on it. And, you know, to your point about financial literacy, I actually had to give a financial literacy course without even knowing what financial literacy was. And I read the textbook and I had to show up and teach it. Best thing I ever had to do. And it was only a day long, but I think that set up the foundation for how I run my projects as well. And it just always goes back to this simple concept of spend less than you bring in, spend less than you bring in. And I remember I had this conversation when I was having my first book. I wrote a few children's books so far. And my first book I got, I'm with Scholastics Canada. And the model there is you write the book and then you send it to them and they do all the work, right? And they do all the marketing and the all this and that. And then you just sit back and you collect royalties every 6 months. And this man, who I'm obviously not going to name names, I wanted to learn from him. And so we were talking about he was publishing a book. I was publishing a book at the same time. And I was really excited for him. And, you know, we talked about our different models and he was self-publishing. And then a group of the youth that we had both been giving like keynotes to, they came and surrounded us. And he put me on the spot in front of everyone and sort of said something like, well, what are your numbers, Sunshine, for your book? And I was like, oh, like, I don't really know because I don't know. And he was like, you always need to know your numbers. Rule number one. And he was super condescending in front of all these students. And then I used the information that he just shared. And I was like, well, all I know is I had to put no money in and I get checks every 6 months and you're still paying for yours and doing a lot of work. So I know those numbers. Always keep that in mind. Maybe I'm not making less, but I didn't invest anything but time and good energy. And now letting people do their job. I don't want to micromanage. I just surround myself with the team that I'm like, you're awesome at what you do. You're awesome at what you do. I can't do your job. You are by far better than me at that. So here you go. And we'll all get our piece of this, like financially. And then we're all going to grow together and thrive together and not just survive.
Yeah, it sounds like there are lessons to be learned there about not being too frightened to do it your own way. Kayla, do you have any comments on this point?
Yeah, I My answer is, well, duh, we need more women in these incredible roles, not because they're women, but because they deserve it based on, you know, their experience, what they can contribute. We would never ask this question, why should a man be a CEO? Like, we would never even question that role that he could be given based on what he deserves, or, you know, the language we even use around that. The Globe and Mail did a really interesting piece around this, around International Women's Day, and even just the lexicon that we use around women CEOs. You know, when we look at men, they're often praised for being ambitious and outspoken and driven, while women in those roles are often rewarded more for having much more communal qualities. So like collaboration, if you're very helpful, you're very warm, et cetera. We sort of make this distinction between those two sets of profiles. And when we look at women in CEO positions, we often coin them with like a girl boss, or, you know, the CEO kind of language to indicate that this is not your usual executive, which almost hardens this message of why are we treating them as these special unicorn humans versus just saying this is an incredible leader that is leading an organization, rightfully so. And that can be a little bit more patronizing, et cetera. So even in just the language that we use as women at the helm of organizations, in trying to answer this question and hold space for the business reasons why we should have more women, that they are more capital efficient. If you look at many of the layoffs that have happened in tech in the last few months, very few of them are with women at the helm of the organizations. They're often potentially a little bit more risk averse, but some of the benefits of that during economic downturn is that they're not laying off people. And you see that in different types of companies. So yes, we need them. I think there are systems that need to be mandated to have more women at the helm of larger organizations as well, that sets a tone with other companies as sort of a trickle-down effect.
Yeah, I really hear that, the idea that, you know, this should be normalized. It shouldn't be a sort of a niche that we talk about. I really think there's a lot there, yeah. I did want to talk about, finally, in the last few minutes we have, the definition of innovation. Sunshine, you are our social entrepreneur on the panel. So I want to talk about the perception people have of what innovation is and even what an entrepreneur looks like. We tend to think of tech, right? We tend to think of science, tech. That's what we think of when we think of a startup. And I want to put to you this possibility that perhaps we need to broaden the way we think of innovation to include areas like social innovation, where women are fairly prominent. Lots of women innovators are social innovators or have social innovation as a priority. Do we undermine or discount the contributions of women innovators by having this narrow definition of what innovation is, by thinking of it as mostly scientific and technical? Do you have comments on this, all three of you, really?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't see it that way at all. Like, I don't even think of, you know, tech specific when I think of social entrepreneurs. I also think, based on the people who come and pitch, right? Have we seen 2,400 pitch this year for Powwow Pitch, just last year, and we kind of have like these cohorts. I think the Indigenous entrepreneurs who are coming forward always have this idea of giving back, because we have giveaway, because we every time you go to someone, you have an offering. And so it's sort of ingrained in how we do life and therefore how we do business. Even calling me a social entrepreneur, I didn't even know what that was until someone called me that, and people have been calling me that ever since. And people call most of the people who come through Powwow Pitch social entrepreneurs, when I think it's just good business and good entrepreneurship, really. It's about fair trade. It's about the equal give and take in all areas of it, not just entrepreneurship. So yeah, that's sort of my take on it. And so I don't even, you know, like, I don't even know what other people think social entrepreneurship is.
Yeah, well, I think broadening the term innovation is so important, because it has been so tech focused. And especially when you think entrepreneurship innovation, most people just jump to thinking of a, you know, high growth tech startup from downtown Toronto. And those aren't the businesses that we necessarily need. To Sunshine's point, there are incredible businesses that either find the term social social entrepreneur empowering or not as well. Everyone has their own identity and what they want to be called and what feels good to them. But social entrepreneurs and those working in any business that are doing things differently or that are having an idea that is sparking some type of social good, that to me is innovation, right? Like that's, there are multiple benefits to these types of businesses. They may be small businesses. There's nothing to say that SMEs can't be super innovative, right? So I think it's providing language that that holds space for what people are trying to prioritize in their business and recognizing that not everyone wants to scale a massive high growth tech company. That is not innovation success to everyone. And for our country as a whole, that can't be the only basket that we're putting eggs into. How do we support the ongoing innovation of every type of business in a wider set of terms and hold space for people's ideas in the way that they want to build their businesses? There's not one particular path that everyone has to follow, and we need to deeply respect that and acknowledge their entrepreneurship journey is just as valuable as somebody else who might be, you know, hiring 300 employees or et cetera. There's different measures of success for everyone, and impact on the globe and on the climate and on, you know, social good. That's a huge part of this. And we see women often entering into those types of businesses or considering the social benefit to the different products and offerings that they have. And we are at a time in this country, in this world, where we have to prioritize that because we need to deeply change some of the problematic, you know, things that we see continue to evolve.
I'd like to pivot us round from that topic now to looking ahead to the future. Two questions for all of you. One, what are your plans? What would you like to do next? What do you want to achieve? Is there something for the next year or 2 years that you have on your list? Juliette.
Well, for Ivano Bioscience, we are about to start selling our products. So that's the big milestone we are having this year or probably next year. So yes, there's a lot of preparation and validation and everything that will help us have a successful launch.
Congratulations. That's so exciting.
Thank you.
That big milestone. Yeah. Wow.
We're really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Sunshine, what are your plans for the next year or so?
Well, personally, I guess, and sort of, I'm starting a new book. And so that's always fun. I love children's books, and this one's going to be interesting. We're also just starting up with Shopify. Build Native was in the States. And so they started this marketplace with Paris Hilton. And now they're going to do it in Canada, but they're going to do it with Pow Wow Pitch. So we're going to be launching that within the next couple of weeks. And it's sort of been a dream for the past few years. And then also just like stabilizing the team, because we did a lot of growth in the past couple of years. And it's just to like, okay, we're just going to do this again. We're going to do it better. Last year was like a testing year. We liked what we tested, and it's just going to be, okay, let's do that again. Let's do it better and then see what happens the year after. So it's really exciting. I'm excited.
That is so exciting. Paris Hilton. Wow. Kayla, what do you have looking ahead?
Yeah, Startup Canada is going back across the country in person. So we've got an incredible Startup Canada tour starting in Whitehorse. So very importantly and symbolically demonstrating that entrepreneurs in the North are just as incredible and worthy of a platform. So we're kicking off in Whitehorse, going to Halifax, Vancouver, Calgary, and Brampton, Ontario. And that's in an attempt to bring together all the different support organizations that exist across Canada and help early stage founders get direct access. So let's talk about funders, you know, ecosystem players, crown corporations and government, et cetera, bringing them all under one roof. So that is meaty and taking up a lot of time, as you can imagine. And then personally, really just spending time with family and friends. My brother suffered a brain hemorrhage in December, so I'm really valuing family time and health and just showing up for the people in your life that really need it, because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow in any context. So yeah, just valuing time with loved ones.
Absolutely. I'm so sorry to hear that. It really does put everything into perspective when something like that comes along, I guess. I hope that turns out all right for your whole family. Second question, looking ahead, can you mention any female-led businesses or products, femtech, say, for example, that you have heard of in the last year or so that you have found particularly exciting? Is there anything you've come across? Kayla, I know you'll have lots. Juliette, are there any female-led companies you know of that you find exciting?
Well, there is one in the bio field that I'm looking to. It's named Twist Bioscience. It's a company that is providing other company with proteins and DNAs and stuff. So that's really the kind of product we're using, and it's led by a woman. So yeah, I think it's very inspiring to just look at what they're doing.
Yeah, fantastic. Sunshine, have you come across any particularly exciting female-led business ventures in the last year or so?
Yeah, I think she's an indigenous superhero. I don't know if you've heard of her, but Jen Harper, she started Cheekbone Beauty, and it's just so amazing to see indigenous products and indigenous faces in places like mainstream. We don't see that very often. We're just starting. So it's like, it's a really game changer because representation matters.
Yeah, I listened to the Powwow Pitch podcast episode about that. That's really exciting. She was great. It was really exciting to hear about that. Kayla, I mean, how to pick? I'm sure you hear about so many.
Too many to list. But I will say we do a Startup Global Pitch competition each year. And last year's top three winners were all women identifying, which is amazing. So I'll give them a quick shout out. Julia Amond of Retina Logic, Broadwin Bridges from PragmaClin, and Stephanie Tien from Arbor. All very innovative, half of them being in STEM and tech. And then Stephanie working with a more product-based business that's scalp sunscreen, supporting good scalp health, because apparently cancer rates within Australia and many other export markets is quite high in your scalp because you put sunscreen on.
Right.
And another femtech product that I would love to shout out is Nadia Laddick from Marlow. She works on the Startup Canada team and also is an entrepreneur. She's the one who's currently pitching in Saudi Arabia at the moment, actually. And she has built a menstrual community and products that serve women that includes lubricated tampons, which is apparently a challenge that many, many women face, really disrupting the conversations we have around menstrual health and health in general. Mm-hmm. So huge shout out to Nadia and the incredible work she's doing.
And I've heard about Marlow on your podcast too, Kayla.
It's there very we go. Exciting.
Incidentally, femtech, is that something that you're seeing more and more of from your position at Startup Canada?
So much more. In our global pitch competitions, in the programs through Startup Women, et cetera, and trying to get them invested in, that's a big hurdle because often male investors, you know, they don't even know what a tampon might be,
right,
or how often you use one, or those types of conversations, and very differently just based on their awareness. So we need more women to be at the other side of that table to understand the need and the huge business opportunity that, you know, 51% of the population could benefit from.
Absolutely. And for some of our listeners who've never heard this term femtech, it can sound a little strange. What are we talking about here? Can you give us the definition?
Yeah, like a feminine technology. So a technology that supports women, could be anything around health, menstrual products, could just be a type of product or technology that supports overall women. We often see them in health. That's probably the biggest space that we've seen across Startup Canada. But if you imagine, there's so many different products that women require, and it's not necessarily a hardcore technology, right? Could be a product-based business leveraging an e-commerce platform and selling online. Those types of businesses still fall under this kind of tech umbrella.
Yeah, and as you say, oftentimes if you're talking to majority male investors, this is a product they won't be familiar with. They're not used to investing in. They don't know about. So it's a field in which we really need to see that grow, right? We really need to see more women inventing these products for other women and potentially funding them as well. Okay, well, I think we're coming vaguely to the end of our discussion here. I'll do a quick fire round here. From each of you, I'd like to hear the number one thing that you would like listeners to take away from today's discussion. Juliet, is there something in particular that you would like listeners to remember from today's discussion?
If you want to, if you have the idea of trying to start a company, you should try it. Like, just do it. There is a lot of, like, there is a big community around entrepreneurship. There is a lot of resources. So just dare.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what Juliet says. Nobody knows what they're doing when they start. You have to just, you're going to stumble. That's part of the process. It's getting back up where it, that's where you find out what you're made of. So try it, jump in.
I love those. And to wrap it around as well, what's for you will not pass you. Ultimately, if an investor deal falls through or, you know, something doesn't go your way, it's all a part of this journey. It's not going to be perfect, but ultimately keep going, have that energy and that momentum. And that also only comes if you're super passionate about something. Don't pick a business idea that you're not passionate about because you need that energy to flow through the challenging times.
Very good advice, even for those who are not entrepreneurs. I can certainly do with some of that in my life too. Well, these are all fantastic points to take away from today. Thank you so much to all three of you for joining me today on The Edge and sharing your experiences and insights. The discussion's been packed with gems that I know will inspire and encourage our listeners. And I think I speak for everyone at MITACS when I say that we are proud to count you as our fellows and our friends in the Canadian innovation ecosystem. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kate. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for supporting The Edge. Now it's time to hear from you. Tell us what you loved about the podcast for a chance to win a limited edition gift from MITACS. First, leave a review or rate The Edge on your podcast streaming platform. Then send a screenshot or link to your review with your full name and contact number to podcast@mitacs.ca. The contest closes on April 27th, so hurry and don't miss out. You've been listening to The Edge, a podcast by MITACS, dedicated to telling the stories of Canadian innovators that are transforming the world. The Edge is produced by Catherine O'Brien and Kate Kenyon. Be sure to visit us on social media and at mitacs.ca to learn more about how we can help you turn your big ideas into reality. I'm your host, Kate Kenyon. See you next time on The Edge.